You are listening to The Morning Review.
You're with Cape Talk.
You're with Cape Talk.
But while we wait for your calls, we move on with the show. Really looking forward to that open line. Use it as a time of reflection over what we've discussed over the last 2.5 hours and counting. But in 2 days' time, the world's best athletes meet again in the 2020 Tokyo Olympics. In fact, the games have already started. I see there's some softball and football games that have been scheduled for today. The opening ceremony takes place on Friday. It's a different type of games, of course, with socially distanced spectators, lots of restrictions on athletes in the athlete village. From what I'm reading, not very much enthusiasm from the people of Tokyo at all for this games, but the games continue nonetheless. And a lot has been said and written about the off-track activities of athletes, the social nature of the world's fittest athletes in their physical prime. There've even been reports of cardboard beds that would apparently have been a deterrent for athletes fraternizing in the dormitories. Now, that is not the case. Apparently, the real reason for the cardboard beds is a cost-saving mechanism. Also, if there's a COVID infection that's reported, it's easier than to just wrap up and discard that cardboard furniture. Also, apparently, it's quite sturdy. It's sturdy enough for non-sport physical activity. There was a UK athlete, Teresa McLennan. He posted on his social media, look, it's false, it's fake news that these are, you know, flimsy beds. And then he's a gymnast, apparently. And he even did, like, bolamakisis. He was jumping on the bed to show it is sturdy enough. But what goes on in that athlete village, away from the eyes of broadcast cameras? South African Olympian Jonas Joseph, she represented this country in the 2004 Athens Olympics in the heptathlon. She joins me now on the line. 2004 SA Olympian. Jonas Joseph, how are you doing today? I'm sure you'll be watching the Olympics as much as the rest of us.
Good morning, Lester. Yes, of course. This is such a different Olympics because of COVID. There will be a lot of changes. It will be interesting to see how the athletes are really going to perform. You know, the crowds really can also put a lot of pressure on the athletes. Mm. So it would be really, because the athletes would basically now run on their own talent.
Yeah.
So, so we'll see what happens.
Before we get into what happens in the athletes' village, lots of discussion about what that impact could be on athletes in stadiums and arenas with limited or no people, spectators at all. Ross Tucker, the sports scientist, said, you know what? It actually could benefit them because sometimes athletes maybe even run their best times, you know, in training, and that they develop and they garner that energy themselves. And then sometimes the stress and anxiety of a crowd full of people sometimes doesn't help them. Are you expecting better times, further throws, better performances with or without spectators in the stadium?
No, I think this is going to be a better Olympics. I think there's going to be some record smashing because there will be an empty stadium. The spectators can really put a lot of pressure on the athletes, especially with the noises and stuff. Sometimes if the guys have to go on their blocks, you still have that echoes. Each and everyone is shouting their own thing. Go SA, go Jamaica. So there will actually be none of that, or there will be a lesser amount of voices in the stadium. So I think this is going to be a great Olympics, and I think there's going to be some different times going on. So it's really, really interesting. So this will be it will always be like the very first Olympics, like ever, because we're going to look at something different. Everything's going to be done differently. I mean, from the traveling already, going into the games, everything is, nothing is the same like yesterday's Olympics. So I think that, the crowd does put a lot of pressure on the athletes. So, and the athletes do feel like they have to also, in their mindset, they have to also, if there's a flag or a group of SA and a group of Jamaica, they feel also like they have to, make the crowd happy rather than thinking of the coaches and the management, which now it's going to be them and the coaches and the management. so, that they need to keep happy. So it will be interesting. Yes.
You've performed in and you represented South Africa in the heptathlon. It's track and field events, and just with that, as an athlete and as someone from South Africa, does your eye wander into the crowd looking for a familiar face, the six-colored flag of the South African flag? It's very distinctive, you know, in a crowd, especially if you are used to that. As an athlete, do you keep your eye out for that, or do you try and focus on the race or the event in front of you?
Not really. I'm a different sort of athlete. I block everything and everyone out. It's almost like going there looking at you. I don't want to be distracted. So what I do is I put my blinkers on and I'm focused in the lane that I'm supposed to do my thing. Look, at my Olympics, the first time I went for heptathlon, so I was extremely focused on what I had to do. Because for heptathlon, if I have to dribble and fall over one hurdle and I'm out of that race, that means my Olympics is over, because that means I would have lost 1,000 points, would have put me at the bottom of the barrel. So I would put my blinkers on. The only thing that really uplifts and makes me smile is if someone says, if it's my time to race, someone says, go South Africa, then I know, okay, I've got support. And that is actually what uplifts me, rather than looking in the stand, because it draws out energy, because you're really nervous. It's your first games, and you're so concentrating on what you need to do, and you need to do right, and you're doing technical events, and everything needs to be right in order for you to conquer. So I always had my blinkers on when the only time I would look in the crowd would be in the 800 meters, and that would be the start of the race. Because the 800 is, there's nothing to really concentrate on. You just need to finish the race and try to run as fast as possible. It's not like high jump or hurdles or shot or the javelin, that you can do something wrong, trip or fall, to lose points. But for the 800, I would proudly look in the stand and I would see the flag, and that would be my upliftment, because then it would be my last event of the day. And I would thought, okay, that flag is going. Okay, now we've got it.
So a different Olympics on the track, in the stadiums, on the courts. But we've also talking about a different Olympics when it comes to behind the scenes in the athlete's village. Of course, the precautions around COVID-19 are ever present. There's so many precautions that the Tokyo Organizing Committee have assured will be in place. But these are young people, these are active people, and these are sociable people. What's it like in that athlete's village when you have all these young people, mostly young people from all around the world? There must be a great sense of community in an Olympic athlete's village.
Yes, there's a fantastically great spirit going on in the village. We've got let's start with food first. We've got the built-in McDonald's at all the Olympic Games. And that is, if you see that big M, you feel at home. There is an entertainment area for the athletes where they can, just relax and unwind. There is a pool area. So there is basically a lot of things for the athletes to do. But now with COVID and everything, it's just that being careful, having to sanitize the whole time, having to wear the mask the whole time. So you feel a bit withdrawn and strange. You actually feel really, really strange.
Yeah.
But I think it's the entertainment that really gets the athletes also to relax, because I think this is affecting. If it affects us at home that's not competing right now a lot, can you imagine how the guys feel at the game? So I think, I actually think for this time they actually did a lot of things differently. Having to look at the chefs, questions being asked, how is this being done? How is this? Everyone is so on their nerves, because if you do one thing wrong, say for instance, the athletics is always the last events that need to take place at the game. So you're thinking about, I still need to lay about 2 to 3 weeks in the village. So if anything goes down and you pick up COVID in that time, then obviously you won't be able to compete.
And so that's career-impacting move, that.
That is suicide. That is absolute suicide. I mean, I would be devastating, because when you've been competing for as long as I've been competing, to me, it's about not getting there, getting the clothing and being in a different country. No, it's about bringing back the glory. I mean, come on, you've got to get a few Asics or Adidas or whatever T-shirts and a tracksuit. It's not about that. So you always need.
No one just wants to go. No one just wants to go and represent. People want to go there, compete, And we'll be speaking to Janice Joseph. She's a 2004 South African Olympian featured in the heptathlon. She's letting us know some of the secrets of what goes on behind the scenes of an Olympic competition. What happens in the athlete's village? There's been a lot written about cardboard beds. Every 4 years, there's stories about how many condoms are distributed at Olympic villages. Actually, Janice, listen to this. This is Rhys McLennan. He's a UK athlete dispelling the rumor that cardboard beds are not sturdy enough. Let's take a listen.
In today's episode of Fake News at the Olympic Games, the beds are meant to be anti-sex. They're made out of cardboard, yes, but apparently they're meant to break at any sudden movements. It's fake. Fake news. In today,
Rhys is quite adamant that it is sturdy enough. But as you said, like, athletes are looking forward to competition. Anything that they do could have an impact on the actual event. But in terms of the space and when young, active people in the physical prime of their life, is there a lot of fraternizing that goes on at an Olympic village?
Actually, when you talk about the youngsters, I don't know about the cardboard beds, because in my time, they actually did it perfectly. I mean, we slept well. It was neat and tidy. It was absolutely great. I had no complaints regarding our sleeping arrangements. Mm. Regarding the condoms, yes, three times yes. Because, look, there is a lot of youngsters. People's already planning this going into the games. It's like, man, if I'm done competing, I'm getting myself a Japanese girl, or I'm definitely hooking up with an American. That's always been my dream.
Are you serious? These
no,
kids?
That is the talk. That is the talk. People want to make not Olympic memories. They want to make glorious memories, because look, we are it happens at all the championships where the guys would say, you know, luckily I could even make a Japanese baby.
No.
Yes, so Janice, there is condom in the
I want to bring in Dr. Dave. Dr. Dave, thanks so much for calling into the show. You want to talk more about the cardboard beds?
Thanks, Lester. How did you know I was doctor? Yes, it's the same old doctor. Curiously enough, my surname is the same as that guy you just interviewed in England called Rhys.
McLennan,
that's beside the point. Okay. Listen, Japan is on the rim of the Pacific Rim of Fire, which means they have earthquakes all the time.
Of course, yes.
And the problem is they have to have shelters all over the place, because they can sometimes have 100,000 displaced people. Mm. So there's a big industry in Japan making disposable sleeping arrangements for people who are in shelters. And what they do is they make these cardboard structures, which are not only beds for the husbands and wives, but for the children and so on. And they can also be surrounded by a cardboard screen, which effectively makes it a family group, and is much nicer for people who are perhaps sleeping in a blooming great hall. So the point is, the industry in cardboard beds in Japan is huge. And as you rightly point out, they can be disposed of in a hurry if necessary, and they're probably far cheaper than any metal bedsteads, which are going to be supplied for the Olympics and then discarded. Mm. But they are completely solid and sturdy, and of course, bearing in mind that you might be in a shelter for, who knows, six weeks, there's going to be a fair amount of couch rugby taking place there, and those beds are strong enough. So please don't think of them as inferior. They're actually possibly better than the metal beds.
Rhys did the testing. Thanks so much, Dr. Dave. Janice, in terms of, you know, there's also younger people. It's generally young people. But who keeps watch at an Olympic village? Are there chaperones? No, these are also adults, but also they are very young athletes as well. Who keeps everyone in check?
Well, the management will appoint a girl captain and a boy captain of the dormitory. It depends on which dormitory there is, dormitory A, B, and C. So the one at B would obviously be the one that's the more experienced athlete to go around and check if everyone's sleeping. But because we are all seniors, we all have to look out for each other. And what they do is they room you with the senior and a junior. At that time, I was 21 years old, so I was roomed with, obviously, and a bit of an older South African athlete. Mm-hmm. So whatever I do, you know, even if I have to play my music a bit loud, she would say, you know, please put your music down. So you would always be roomed with a senior. to look out and see what you do. But on, as you are the first one to make the games, the senior will always, you know, how can I say, they will punk you to just to welcome you into the team. That's about the only nasty thing that will go on there in the dormitory. But otherwise, and then also in front of the dormitory, there is security. That would see who comes in and out. So other, you know, other countries are not supposed to be coming into the dormitory. So they are kept. So there is a security in front of the dormitory, but inside you'd be roomed with the senior, and we do have meetings. So imagine you're having to do something wrong. Like you will get from the youngsters to jump out of the window to go to the Americans. And like we go back to my previous conversation, hooking up with the girl that they can't see, because if you go out, the management needs to know where are you going.
So it's like camp. So Janice, this is like a summer camp.
Yes, definitely. This is Iron Core. This is serious things, because look, all the countries want to get a medal. And by the way, if you do get a bad day, it won't go to Janice Jones or something. That's the thing. Uh-huh. So it would be in the newspapers, and it would be bad on the federation. So you also don't want to do that, because you can be, you know, you can be suspended. And you also don't want to put the bad name on the federation. And, you know, it's your sponsorship that also, you know, and it's hanging in the air. So you need to think about a lot of things.
Who's the funnest country to hang out around at a World Champs or an Olympics?
Oh, the Jamaicans. I love the Jamaicans. I love it. When I come in, I've got so much friends at the games. Actually, the Jamaicans and it's more Trinidad and Tobago, Jamaican Bahamians. Oh, I love it. I've got a few friends from the U.S. as well. If I enter the village, it's almost like everyone is like, if they see the South African flag coming, they're like, is Janice here? Has Janice arrived? So I always make sure that I make the team so I can see my friends.
But Janice, you've had an illustrious career. I in fact know you. You ran for a school, an opposing school of ours. You went to Steenberg High. And then in the mid-2000s, when we would see you at Greenpoint Stadium, we would be scared. I went to SP. And we would be scared of Janice Joseph. She was, save us also, VP. Which you ran for Steenberg High. And of course, when you went to Champs of Champs, then you're all in one team.
Yes.
But since then, you've gone everything from World Championship athletics to a heptathlon in the Olympics. You've done so many things in terms of athletics, but then you'd had a small change in career. You then went on to rugby.
Yes. Yeah, I've been South Africa's number one in all my events, 100, 200, hurdles. You know, Geraldine, then, you know, outclassed me in the sprints, which is she's a brilliant sprinter. Then I went over to the heptathlon. Then I became South Africa's number one in hurdles, long jump, South Africa's triple record holder in heptathlon. I was at a time ranked 8th in the world for heptathlon. That is how I got my Adidas sponsor. Then eventually I got my last medal for South Africa in Benin, and I decided I wanted to go for team sport. That is why I retired. And I started playing rugby, and I made the seventh team for the Stormers. I was sometime training with the Blitzboker Sevens team. I then played for Pinel, and then I played for Boerland for 3 years. So I've actually, people actually wanted to send me for gender tests because they couldn't understand why I'm so much in teams. People were saying, no, wait, this can't be. Oh my God, Janice is still competing.
Okay, Kevas Finnach, you were fast in high school and you were strong in high school. Been following you since then, since the early 2000s. But you've also play a part in children and sports development. You work for an organization called Cool Play, and they use sports as a means of youth development. Tell me a bit more.
Okay, Cool Play is a sort of a, you know, Cool Play has really changed my life. And Cool Play is linked with Laureus, and they are actually sending out champions all over the high schools in the northern and southern zone to work with the less privileged kids, trying to make changes in their lives. So I've been blessed. I've been working for Cool Play for 7 years, working with the guys that really need help. We actually linked to trying to make a difference in the lives of the youngsters. Those guys that can't afford to get to the top without sponsors. Not all of the kids, you know, are born rich. You know, they need to work themselves onto the top. So our work as Cool Play Champions is to motivate them every day, try to get them off the streets and try to just keep them. Look, we are an after-school event. We do all activities that we done after school. That is almost like to get those guys that, you know, the kids that got absolutely nothing to do after school, hanging out with the elder guys, and you know, they've got no direction, so sense of direction. So what we do is we try to make that changes to keep them away from, you know, out of harm's way, trying to do a lot of things for them as Cool Play champions. So when Cool Play entered, I've also, you know, that also changed my life. And when I was still competing, I started working for Cool Play, so I could also rumble from those guys, trying to motivate them and the things that I've been going through as an athlete, you know, struggle and having to. And I would also tell them about my claim to fame. And the only time they would take you serious if you actually show them pictures. Because, you know, it'll be 1 year in and 1 year out.
So, they can ask me how fast Janet Joseph was. But a quick message here. Theo from Strand, you a little celebrity. You asked, was Janice at Delta Primary?
Yes, I was at Delta Primary.
Here you go, Theo. Janice, I know you, like me, we're going to be watching the Olympics starts. Well, games have already started. The opening ceremony on Friday. All the best. Keep us up to date of what's happening in the world of Janice Joseph. Thank you so much for just lifting the veil for us. Just that little bit. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate it. It was my absolute pleasure to share my experience of being at the Olympic Games with Leicester and with the crowd.
Janice Joseph, thanks so much for joining us.